Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you.
Bob, are there golden opportunities with gold coming up?
Golden opportunities.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah, I've done a lot of historical research on gold. And you get to a different opinion than the mainstream on gold. That arose back in the 1960s when currency depreciation and inflation began to get going. And the guys were sort of right on the thesis, dollar down, gold up, gold stocks up. But when you look at it, that is a speculation in foreign exchange fluctuations. But the fascinating thing is that there's been now with our late great financial bubble, it was number six. Number five was 1929, and the first one was the South Sea Bubble in 1720. And all of them had common characteristics. And one of them was that with the bubble, copper's real price goes up, and then it goes down. And oddly enough, going the other way, during the final stages of a bubble, gold's real price, as deflated by the CPI, goes down. So, and this we got on our bubble as it, on the senior indexes, climaxed in January 2022. So it's generally working out that we are transitioning into yet another post-bubble deflation. I mean, it's really weird to talk about deflation when everybody's hyped on inflation, but I've got four indicators that are on path, and one is gold's real price, the other is copper's real price, the other is that real long interest rates go up, and that's becoming painful, and the other is that the senior currency becomes firm. So then you can see why I'm not particularly bullish on gold's price in U.S. dollar terms. But the trick to it, Jim, is you got to look at gold divided by commodities. And that then, the commodities, use the CRB, and it's a proxy for mining costs. So if you've got a fixed price of bullion, which has been the case in the senior currency going way back for 150 years or something like that. But nonetheless, in a post-bubble contraction, gold's real price goes up and the gold miners make money because their costs fall relative to the bullion price. And this is Mother Nature's way of bringing more gold into production. Because on the other side, in a post-bubble contraction, it's a credit contraction as well. So, you know, credit becomes very tight and awful. So it's Mother Nature's way of beginning to put in some real liquidity back into the credit markets is with an increase in gold production. So it's wonderful. So you take the price of gold and divide it by the CRB. Now, that sort of represents general costs. And it went up April, May, and that indicator became overbought, as did the gold stocks, and we advised that, and then did some usual count and stuff like that, and then outlined that maybe the whole sector, golds, could go down into October, or thereabouts, you know what I mean? And indeed they did. We had a very nice low in the GDXJ right in early October. And the other thing is that this cost went down. Gold by divided by commodities also corrected. Now, here's another one that is really easier to understand. Is you take gold and divide it by crude oil. Because in any kind of mining, about 60% of mining costs are energy related. So, you know, I mean, you're running a mill and mines and stuff, and you're using diesel, and you're using hydrocarbons, you know, blasting as fertilizer and stuff like that. So that one is also went up to last April, May, became overbought and came down. Now, both these key guides became oversold at about the right time. The GDXJ became oversold, and we even take a look at the Toronto Venture Exchange as a proxy for junior stocks and junior gold. And so this, then, we've got the low, and the advice was to begin accumulating a really good position in gold stocks, because over the next few years, if the S&P is going to get crashed, gold stocks will get hit as well. But when the S&P is not getting crashed, the gold stocks will not just go up, but they'll outperform the S&P. So when you've got the GDXJ outperforming the S&P, there's going to be some fund managers out there, equity fund managers, who are looking at that, and they see a couple of quarters of outperformance there. And they may not want to buy gold stocks, but because they're performers, they're going to have to get in. So you can see this really building quite a case for not just a rising price, a rising gold stocks, but more and more participants in it. So then with this, the way I did it with gold divided by the CRB, or gold divided by energy prices, the crude oil, that both are proxies for the cost of mining. And it doesn't matter what the bullion price is in U.S. dollars. So long as the cost of mining goes down, the earnings and profitability in gold mining will go up, and also the earnings will go up. So this changes the whole view on the gold sector, is because you'll be buying gold stocks based upon a stream of increasing earnings. And that's investment. It's not the old speculation of dollar down, gold up, gold stocks up. No, it is an investment based upon a future stream of rising earnings, which was the case during the 1930s. I know there's a good example with Homestake, which was the premier producer back then, and its stock got whacked with the 1929 crash, but you could have bought it for $9 in 1931, right up to the end of 1932, when the price of gold was fixed at $20.67 an ounce. But what happened was that, to the end of 1932, Homestake stock was up about 130%. And in 1932 was a dreadful market for the whole New York Stock Exchange, like the S&P. But the gold stocks were doing well. And with this, Homestake's earnings per share were up about 130%. And to the end of 1932, gold was still priced at $20.67 an ounce. So there was no change in the price, in the nominal price of gold, but the crash took down the cost of mining gold. So this is where Homestake was making money, and it continued. So let's say you could buy your Homestake stock in 1931 or 32 for $9 a share, and it went up to $65 a share in the mid-1930s. Now, also, at that time, gold miners dividended everything out. Everything they made was dividended to shareholders. So on your $9 purchase through the mid-1930s, Homestake was paying $4 a share dividend. So it shows you just how much money is being made by the gold miners in a post-bubble deflation. So this is what we're looking for. And as I say, the way we keep track of it is gold divided by CRB and gold divided by crude oil. And they are on track and took a hit with everything down into early October. And now they're starting to recover. And some of the gold stocks are starting to recover as well. So there'll be some pretty good swings in them. But the main thing is that the gold fraternity out there is still going on that you buy gold because the dollar is going to go down. But here's one of the features of a post-bubble contraction, is that the really careful money, and there's a lot of it out there, it goes to the most liquid items. And that means U.S. Treasury bills, you know, shorter than 1 year, very liquid and very safe. So then that provides a bid for the dollar. But also it'll go to the liquidity of gold, and that provides a bid for gold. So I'm not looking for any huge changes in the dollar price for gold, but I'm very excited about the real price of gold and earnings and for the sector. So, and this has happened before. Every post-bubble deflation has favored the gold miners. And the way it used to be when there was still alluvial gold deposits to be found, the great gold rushes, like the Klondike in 1898, that was the bottom of that Great Depression. And what are the characteristics of that? Many men unemployed, and the real price of gold going up, so people go looking for it. Now, there's probably every alluvial deposit has been discovered. But even back, like 1845 was a depression bottom, and it was close to that depression bottom when you had the California gold rush, a high real price for gold, and widespread unemployment, and whoosh, everybody goes to the gold rush. So I've traced back the Great Depression gold rushes, I think all the way back to, I think there was even one in 1698 in Russia or something like that. So I should have refreshed myself on the page where I've got all those dates. So anyways, what we're looking for here is the low for the gold sector, which seems to be, well, it came down when it should, became oversold when it should, and well, our advice is to get a really good position, because not only will gold stocks be going up, but they'll likely outperform the S&P. And it would be a multi-year bull market with, you know, there's going to be intermediate swings and there'll be times when it gets overbought. And also, Jim, within this, there will be great discoveries made. And on some of these, they could be big enough where you'll get an international play where, you know, the whole of the mining world kind of wants to get into a hot, big global stock, even if it was a false one. Remember Briex? That was a false one, but people had to get in. So, yeah. So this is, it's been a reliable pattern, and the action over the last year is on the transition to a post-bubble contraction, and the features will be, as I say, base metals going down in real terms, and which then puts a depression into the base metal mining so that miners are laid off and equipment's available. But then with gold's real price going up and prosperity coming into the gold side, you have the advantage of being able to pick up the mining equipment and miners and all that sort of stuff. And there you are. So this it's hard to believe that when you have had the gold community pushing gold and gold stocks based upon dollar down and inflation up, they've been doing it since the 1960s. But now we're into a new world where that no longer holds. And the new world is, as I say, earnings going up and gold stocks becoming an investment. So, and one of the things that we're looking for here is the rallies. Rally could be quiet, and also there'll be times when you get an uptick in gold's dollar price, and that'll drive the old community wild. But underneath it all will be the earnings improving, and eventually the non-gold world finding out that, hey, here's a sector that's performing. You can see, you know, some young hotshot equity fund manager, and he sees two quarters of GDX outperforming the S&P. He's got to get in. So it's a wonderful looking story, and I think it'll work out. We should be well-versed, investors should be well-versed in different kinds of gold stocks from the majors right down to the juniors. And as I say, that with this kind of a setup, there will be some fabulous international discovery plays underway. And so that you have the combination of a rising indexes for gold stocks, plus the probability of some discoveries where then individual stocks can become huge performers. So, Jim, I like the story, and I'm looking forward to it.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye today in a moment.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, some of the headlines that caught your eye. First one, Tesla's China-made EV sales volume falls almost 11%. I thought they were in love with EVs in China.
No, I was just talking to my friend, the automotive engineer, and he says that it's just collapsing. The EV story is just collapsing, batteries and all that sort of stuff, a major problem. So, yeah, it was a fad. associated with a financial bubble. The financial bubble is over, and this EV mania is over as well.
What about the BC government's plan to ban the sale of new conventional vehicles in 2035? You can only buy EVs.
That'll get shut down. They'll take a walk on that one. Public opinion will bury that one. So,
Headlines that should go together. VW's new electric vehicle orders miss target, and German EV sales plummet in September.
Yep. It's over. It's over. And then you got these pictures of battery cars with the batteries self-igniting just on their own and blowing up. And then also, if you are in a collision and crack them open and anything get in there, and then also, even when those batteries are being made and circuits are being made, all the contacts would be so pure. You can't, you know, it's unbelievable. So if it's not quite as pure as they demand, then it sets up a problem where a circuit can fail and these things self-ignite, and often with loss of life. And you've seen images of large ships, container ships with a few electric cars on them. The electric cars got wet in the storm and shorted out and set everything on fire and ruined all the containers and effectively sunk the ship. So, but it's been, the electric vehicle thing has been an incredible promotion by governments and the New World Order and all that sort of stuff. But hey, in a contraction, people get a little practical, and the EV story is fading as we speak, so, yeah.
Car owners fall behind on payments at highest rate on record. Doesn't matter what kind of car.
Yeah, that's keeping up on their payments, and the chart broke to new highs, so that one is they just can't afford payments, so it's a disaster, yeah.
China's NASDAQ-style index falls to record low.
Yep, that's the story. Bear market is for NASDAQ-style index is extending. Yeah, yeah. And then we got our old friends Evergrande and Country Garden.
Right. China's property crisis has unfolded, going from Evergrande, which was their second largest company, to Country Garden, which could be the biggest real estate company in the world, considering how many people are invested in it.
Probably.
Could be.
But it's a big one.
Yeah. Anyway, what's the tale there for China? They tried to go capitalist, Bob. Is it because they don't know how to deal with this?
Well, you had authoritarian government caught up in a bubble, and so they built roads from nowhere to nowhere. They built empty apartment towers and all that sort of stuff, and it's going to be a huge waste of capital, and they'll never reclaim it. So it's working towards a deflationary bust.
Their real estate reminds me of what happened to railways in North America in the late 1800s, early 1900s, where they were building multiple railways to nowhere with nothing built.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually they collapsed. That was the whole story behind Downton Abbey.
Yeah. I was looking at a video just recently about the first operating railroad, the Stockton to Darlington Railroad in England, and there was a financial bubble that blew out in 1825, and the hot stocks of the day were railroad stocks, but they had no railroads. They were, promoters were going around getting the rights to build a railroad from A to B, and so that's what it was based upon. And the first railroad really didn't start running until 1830 or something like that. So, but the bubble and everything was discounted in 1825. But in transportation, there was an earlier one in the 1770s with a bubble mania, and that one was in building canals. But it was the same thing. The promoters got the rights to build a canal from A to B without the canal. But hey, it was hot stuff. The stock prices went up. And of course, the advantages in going from canals were summertime drought. Drought didn't bother a railroad. And then in the wintertime, the canals froze up, and that was no problem. But there's an interesting picture of a canal barge going through a low tunnel. And the barge crew were laying on their backs on the roof of the barge, and their feet were on the roof, so they were walking the barge through the tunnel, so to speak. So, but each one of these was a tremendous increase in efficiencies until, every time it goes like that. It's wonderful, but it is made for some wonderfully speculative stock markets.
Headline, America's downtowns are empty, fixing them will be expensive.
Oh, yeah. And that's a political issue where downtowns, not just in the United States, but in big cities in Canada, have just become seething problems of down-and-out people, mentally disturbed people, druggies, the whole thing. And then, of course, what happened here is that let's go back to the States, where the Democrats really removed the rule of law and removed or diminished the policing functions, and downtown areas became just a terrible mess. And then with the riots, Black Lives Matter riots, which, you know, caused billions of dollars of damage, property damage in Seattle and Portland and Baltimore and places like that, downtowns are bad. And so ordinary folk can look at what they've got downtown, and they're moving to nicer places. And so this is leaving vacuums. And of course, you know my quip about why people live in big cities. They like to see the air they breathe. So,
and our last headline, why olive oil is so expensive right now.
Yep. They had a drought in the Mediterranean area region where a lot of olive oil is grown, and that was it. You had extreme drought, a lot of heat, and it has hit their production seriously. And really, the olive oil price, I think, sort of went from 1,300 to over 9,000. And also vinegar, we talked about that a month or so ago, was going up as well. So your basic salad dressing is becoming very expensive.
Now, but could it have to do, I heard olive oil now, the trade is controlled by the mafia, much like the avocado trade is controlled by the Mexican cartels.
I did not know that. But
yeah.
At any rate, the shortage of olives is drought related.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you, and we look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy, the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.